Canadian Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Robert Peary, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Ah, that's so... You know, Robert, you're such a... you can be very aggressive sometimes, but boy, you have such a gentle speaking voice.
Yeah. That's because I needed to talk slowly so I remember what I was supposed to say.
We have a new guest host this week. We'll meet him. We'll have the audience listeners meet him in a second, but let's get through the paperwork of where you can find us. You can get us at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies, and we pop right up. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM, or you can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or leave us a voicemail, 740-205-6456. We also encourage you to check in with Get Glue. I don't think anybody's doing that anymore, but I, it makes us look cool if you, like, check in. And I've also said at Foursquare, just pick a place, say it's the magical studio in the sky, become mayor of it, and then people can fight over that. But that's about it for how to get a hold of us. Robert Peary is the newly appointed editor at large at Film School Rejects. Congratulations, Robert.
Thank you, sir. It's a very important position.
What exactly does that mean?
I don't know yet. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to be focusing on creating sort of the overreaching event type things. Like right now we're working on 31 Days of Horror, which is, you know, a new horror movie every day in the month of October, and then, like, you know, for Christmas, we might, this is a preview, special preview, right now I'm planning on the 12 days of an inappropriate Christmas, so I'll just be planning bigger features that'll, you know, span multiple posts.
Awesome. That sounds good. Those are fun to write for. I participate in the 31 Days of Horror every year, so it's always nice to throw down on some special horror movies. I did Fright Night earlier this month, and that was... I had to give some love to the original because it's amazing how many people were like, that's a remake?
Yeah, the original is very good. The remake was very, like, average. Like, I didn't mind watching it, but I definitely did not care. You know?
Yeah, it got a lot more love than I think it deserved. It was, I think I'll like it probably better when it comes out on video and I watch it sort of in, you know, where it's less of an event, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of underwhelming in the theater.
Yeah. So we got actually quite a few movies to review this week. So let's jump in here. The first one we're really not going to review because they didn't screen it for us and neither of us saw it. But it's the big year in which Steve Martin, Jack Black, and Owen Wilson go traveling.
Have you ever wondered what killed your marriage to Steph in 03?
First of all, I was married to Bridget in 03.
January 1st, I'm out of here.
You realize the phase after retirement looks a little bit like this?
I just want to do something big, you know?
We need a little adventure.
I'm doing a big year.
The year to do all the things we never could.
Most people wake up one day and realize they didn't do everything they wanted to do.
Am I nuts, Edith?
Are you asking me as a therapist or as a wife?
Which one is cheaper?
I have not even... I've seen one trailer on TV for this. And it looks like it might be fun, but I don't know.
I've seen it. They've been playing the trailer a lot here in on TV in Los Angeles. And I got to say, I'm not interested. I don't know how... They got three pretty big names to do a movie where they are looking for a bird, and it's called The Big Year. Why is this such a good idea? Like, who was like, hey, you know what? Let's get three edgy comedians and then have them, like, be a PG comedy.
Well, part of the thing is Steve Martin has mellowed out so much in his old age. And I mean, he's still very charming in the stuff he does, but, like, the edgiest thing he's done recently, and I use that term very loosely, is, like, Bowfinger, which was, what, in, like, 98 or 99
when that
came out?
That's loosely in terms of recently and in times of edgy.
I'd like to see him go back and do, like, The Jerk Part 2.
Yeah. Maybe as he gets older and older, he can do a grumpier old men kind of jerk.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he'll take a turn like Betty White, where she suddenly turned like 115 and just went really raunchy.
Yeah.
I look forward to that. But yeah, the big year gets a preemptive suck because they didn't show it to us because it's Fox and they tend to not do a lot of screenings. I didn't even know what it was until I like looked it up.
Yeah.
So, but the one that I did know, I was completely aware of coming out, is the next film we're going to talk about is Footloose. A scrappy teenage boy comes to a town where dancing is forbidden in the hopes to get everyone's freak on.
Reverend, this is Bryn McCormick.
We are so happy to have you with us.
I think you're going to love Beaumont.
People gave you crap about that tie yet?
Nah, but the day just started.
Public dancing is against the law if you're under 18 in Beaumont.
Are you kidding me? What do people do here? Just hang out?
Yeah, and other stuff.
I don't want you to see that boy again.
Why?
Because I've heard he's trouble.
Are there still towns like this? Like, is it? It's 2011. Are people still not allowed to listen to rock and roll in America? It's
a bit of a stretch, actually, because the original came out in 84 and was based on an actual incident at a small, very religious town, I don't know how loosely it was based on it, but I've been all over this country and I have yet to be arrested for dancing, in public or playing my music too loud.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I believe it existed at some point when people were like, you know what, that's the devil's music, don't do it. But you know, we're getting to a point where you can drop it like it's hot and no one really looks at you twice.
True. I think that's absolutely right. Now here's the thing with this movie is, I don't know, I am a bit conflicted because I do fall in that camp of going, well, why bother remaking it? Because there's nothing, it's not like when they remake, it's not even any special effects movie. It doesn't involve makeup or digital effects that you could then say, like when they remake Clash of the Titans, for example, whether or not you liked it, there's a big difference between stop motion animation and the full blown CGI world that they created. And you're like, okay, I at least understand, even if somebody didn't like it, you understand we're like, okay, we're going to make it new and bigger and cooler. There's nothing in this, and there's nothing they need to do, and there's nothing they did do in this movie that makes it, you could shot this exact same movie in 1984, and in fact, they did. So I'm on that camp. But on the other hand, I'm also in the camp of understanding that it's a very soundtrack-driven movie, and it's aimed at the kids of today. And as we all know, kids are narcissistic and stupid, and they're going to watch, if they were to watch the original Footloose, they'd be like, why is that old guy in it?
Yeah.
You know? So I get the point of trying to update it for, quote-unquote, the kids of today. And in that respect, it works. It's actually kind of what a remake should be, because it is updating it for a younger audience. You know, just as if in the 80s, they were like, if this were a remake of something that came out in the 50s and they made it in the 80s and they were like dancing to, like, you know, Cole Porter and Frank Sinatra, the parents were, oh, heavens, this is terrible, you know.
Yeah.
They do a lot of covers of the songs, but it's basically the same movie. And in that respect, it works. It's a big crowd pleaser. And, I mean, every single beat of the film is updated from the original film. So it's not, they don't do a whole lot of changes to it, but it's not like Psycho where it's a shot-by-shot remake. I think it helps having Craig Brewer behind it. I think he's a good enough director that he didn't make it too CW-ish, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Juliana Hough has a great body. I don't know if she's going to be a great actor, because she is sort of, I mean, she's okay, but she's nothing special in terms of acting. She's just sort of like the hot it girl at this point.
Yeah.
So, it was okay. It wasn't awful, but it wasn't great. But the audience that I saw it with, which is kids and fans, they're going to love it. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
Okay.
Kind of rocks.
It rocks to a degree where you won't be kicked out of your town for listening to it or watching.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we got to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about a couple more movies. And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We were talking a little bit about Footloose. I want to say a couple other things about it that are somewhat interesting to note. Like I said, pretty much it's just an updated version of the movie. And it works on that level. It's getting a lot of good buzz. I don't think it's worthy of the great buzz it's getting, but it's one of those movies that you'll see and you'll be like, that was better than I thought it would be. Yeah.
That's all you can hope
but,
for.
Yeah, and I sort of, that was the way I felt about the original Footloose. I didn't see it in the theaters. I saw it on video, and I'm like, it was okay, but it was like a better soundtrack and a movie to talk about that people knew than to actually really watch and get into, because it kind of had some slow parts and that sort of thing. The other thing I found interesting is if you watch the original, it has, you know, Kevin Bacon is coming into town and he smokes and he drinks and he dances, and those are his big things. And in this one, he drinks and he dances. The only person who smokes is the loser boyfriend that the girl has before she kind of falls in love with the Kevin Bacon character, who kind of like looks like Johnny Depp, a young Johnny Depp. So the smoking's kind of weird, but the whole premise is, of course, as you know, the there were these kids that were drinking and partying and dancing, and they got in a crash on the way home, and they got killed, and that's why the town passed this no dancing, no drinking, no partying ordinances. Now, what's really funny about the film is they really focus on the dancing, and if you watch the movie, you're just like, yeah, no, they were having like a huge keg party and were like speeding like crazy. It wasn't dancing that killed these people. It was the fact that they were drunk out of their mind and driving really too fast and then went head on into a truck.
Yeah, they should have made like drunk driving illegal.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
I mean, I would imagine that the town had a law against minor drinking and you're not allowed to drink and drive. But they kind of skirt around that as people, because at no point does anyone say, look, they were doing some bad stuff.
Yeah.
And foolish things. It's not the dancing that killed them.
No.
The Brewer does a great job of sort of skirting around that without addressing that issue. So, you know, it's, but like I said, it's a crowd pleaser for the, for these kids, these young whippersnappers who are watching the movie.
Excellent.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next film, which is The Thing. This is the prequel to John Carpenter's 1982 classic, which follows a team of Norwegians in Antarctica who discover a dangerous alien.
48 hours ago, we found something quite remarkable.
What'd they find?
There's a structure.
In Antarctica?
And a specimen.
Really?
I'm going to take a tissue sample.
Do you really think that's a good idea?
Yes, I do.
What was it doing to him?
It's imitating his cells. I think this thing copies its prey and then hides inside it.
Now, I have not seen this. I'm curious to see it, but even though it's a prequel, so you know how, allegedly, I'd know how it end. As spoiler-free as you can get from shot to shot, what did you think of this, Robert Fury?
You know, I actually liked it quite a bit, and I feel like I might be alone on this one. Like I actually liked the Nightmare on Elm Street remake when I first saw it, and it turned out that I was in the 1%. I am the 1% Occupy Nightmare on Elm Street. But yeah, I like that one. But I like The Thing. I mean, it's not perfect, but in terms of the leading into the original as a prequel, they do actually a really good job. Overall, I mean, the Norwegian base looks correct. I mean, obviously, there's some stuff that doesn't make as much sense. Like, it's a Norwegian base, but, you know.
Why there's a woman there?
There are actually two females, and one of them is an American. And there's also an American helicopter pilot and his American buddy. And most of the Norwegians actually speak English. There's literally only, I think, two of them in the entire movie that can't speak English, and like that's like made a point of like, oh hey, these guys, they're actually straight up Norwegian. But I mean, you watch,
so I mean, in a sense, it doesn't make it doesn't quite click with the first movie, because in the first movie they like had no idea who these people were, and they're just, oh, they're Norwegians, where you'd think if you're stationed in Antarctica and there was another outpost that had Americans in it, you might be aware that they existed.
Yeah, I mean, it actually
does. It take place in 1982.
It does. Yeah, it might say 1981, but it's definitely, you know, it's a direct prequel. Like, you're watching the movie and you're like, okay, how are they going to end this? Because I know how it's supposed to end. And there's one thing that's only in this movie that's left a little bit open. So, like, there's, you know, so you have no idea what really happens here, because this movie, you know, ends. So there's a question. They could theoretically do something else with this later. But the actual end of the movie is perfectly in line with the start of the next film. Like, it's like it ends exactly as it should. Like, if it wouldn't
have... did you watch recently the John Carpenter's The Thing, or did you not want to sort of go in too close to it.
Well, I mean, I didn't watch it very recently. I watched it a couple months ago, but I've seen the movie like 12 times. It's like actually, regardless of genre, in like my top five films of all time. Like I'm a huge fan of The Thing.
Yeah, as am I. I mean, I'm a huge fan. I just watched like a couple days ago because I did a drinking game on Film School Rejects about it. And I guess one of the questions I have is, me as sort of like the geek who loved the original film, do they set stuff up to the point? Is there an axe in the wall? Is there a guy in the chair? If you watch the first movie, you see that there's somebody there who cut his throat and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Do they drop that stuff in and you'd be like, oh, I remember that part in the movie and it's very set up that way? Is it?
They actually do that. You definitely get the axe and you see why it's there and why it's left behind. And you see the guy in the chair. Although I think they could have, like, he's sort of a character who sort of just like, they stop following what he's doing. Like, you just don't know where he is. And then like you catch up to him and find out that that's what happened.
He's that guy. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's in the movie a fair bit, and it's one of the few things that, like, you feel cheated out a little bit, because, like, this guy, he's, like, right here, and then all of a sudden, like, you're just like, isn't there another character that's supposed to be around? And then at the end, they're like, oh, here he is, he killed himself, just like you know he would, and, like, I mean, like, just like you see he does later. But I mean...
Yeah, go on.
I'm just gonna say, they burned down the right buildings, they parked the helicopters in the right spots, they explain the helicopter that chases the dog. They have the dog. They have the grenades that the Norwegians are throwing grenades at the dog. And, like, you find there's a crate of grenades on the base. And you see the ice block and, like, how that the alien or the creature was in and how it ends up in its present state. They actually did a really good job matching up all the things. And, like I said, the end, like, the last, like, 90 seconds of the movie... is basically the first time we see the Norwegians in the original. I don't know if you can really call it the original, but you know, whatever it is, John Carpenter's version. So I would say that it is.
Now, the question, because I've been seeing people, and I guess it's just complaining about CGI effects is sort of the new black. Everyone just is like, that's the new, let's complain about Star Wars type thing. It's one of these things that's very popular to complain about, and everybody complains about. But that's just the way special effects are done. And as much as I loved Rob Bottin's brilliant work in the first film, I guess my question is, do the digital effects work? Because as good as Rob Bottin's effects were, there's holes in it. I mean, there's like when Palmer's on the chair, he goes from being just looking kind of freaky to his entire face covered in blood. So they have these cutaway moments and they have these special effects that don't 100% hold up, but just the majority of them are so amazing in the original that you forget all the, you know, the connections. Do the effects work or do they overdo it?
I think they work. I'm a big fan of the practical effects in the first movie, and part of what you hold against the new one is that, you know, they're CGI and you see exactly what they're trying to do, but, like, they're very clean and shiny and reflective. Like, in the original movie, a couple times you have, like, the little spaghetti-like tentacles, like, erupt out of things. And that happens again in this movie, but when it does, like, there's so many more of them because, you know, it's a computer. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, copy and paste some more in there.
Do whatever we want.
Yeah, but, and so, like, at times you're like, oh, yeah, I mean, the practical definitely has moments where, like, I would prefer practical. But the CGI is okay. I think the downside to CGI is, for the most part, it looks good. But there are some of the things that are a little too, you know, like, wet. You know, CGI looks a little wet a lot of times.
Yeah.
Because it's just very shiny. There are a few times when that happens. But overall, it's pretty good. But I think the freedom that CGI gave them sort of... let them play a little too much, like in,
and that's usually the problem. That's part of the problem with CGI blood.
Yeah,
is you can, well, not partly because it looks bad.
It looks terrible,
they're not quite there with, but they can say, oh, well, we can really go crazy, and you're just like, okay, now you're just being gratuitous. Whereas to practically get the effect or a spray sometimes takes a lot of work, where it's just a couple clicks on a keyboard. Real quick, what's your official grade? Rock sucks, kind of rocks, kind of sucks?
I would give it at least kind of rocks, bordering on rocks. You know, like I said, okay. A big fan. I played the video games. The thing had a video game on PlayStation 2. I played it, a big fan. Yeah. So it doesn't hold a candle to the original, but it lights a match in the same room as the original.
Sounds good. All right, we got to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some more films.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We have Robert Fury here from Film School Rejects, and finally, Robert, you can swear.
Yes. The internet I mean, segment. Fuck yes.
Yes, that's what everyone loves to say. Oh, I've had people though when they're like, oh good, and I'm like, well, aren't you going to swear? You swore in the last segment. I had to bleep it out. You swear in this one.
No, I've been behaving myself. We'll see if it comes out. I don't know.
Cool. But yeah, the thing, I have to say just one thing about the thing. I'm looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. As long as it's competently made and as long as they're true to the original, I think it's fair to call it an original, even though technically
yeah.
the 82 version's a remake. If you go back and watch the original thing from Another World, they change it so drastically. Story-wise from the original John W. Campbell story that you can almost call the Carpenter version original.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's pretty different.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm curious to see what it is. It's something that, I will say this. I'm glad they just didn't remake it.
Yeah, I think there are some parts where it's where they do things that are a little too much remakey. Like overall, there's a lot of stuff that's different. Mm-hmm. But I actually wrote a boiling point about it a couple of weeks ago, where like, you know, if it's not a remake, why do we have an American helicopter pilot with a beard? Why is his best friend a big, mean-looking black dude? Why is their rec room, built around a pool table just like the other one? Why?
Yeah.
This and that, and sometimes you're just like, that's a little too much remakey instead of, you know, prequely. Like, there's a lot of, like, he didn't have to be a helicopter pilot. Like, they don't need a helicopter pilot. I mean, I guess you need one, but
you need one, yeah.
But, he doesn't have to be this guy. And there was another part of it that another one of those, like, well, why is this? Part like the dog. There's the dog chews through the fence, just like, which is a great scene in the Carpenter version. Like, these dogs are freaking the fuck out.
Yeah.
And you're like, God damn, what's got these guys so upset? Like, what's going on?
And it's the same shot of the dog trying to chew the changeling away.
Well, I hope this isn't too spoilery, but there's only one dog in this movie. Like, that doesn't make too much sense. Like,
why would you just have one dog?
Exactly. Like, why don't you have a whole pen full of dogs? Like, the reason the dogs are in the first one is because you need like working sled dogs. Like, it's not like they're for fun. Like, this guy just has his pet dog with him, yet the pet dog has its own gigantic pen. But
yet the pen dog has the pet dog has his own pen, and it just happens to be a sled dog.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a chihuahua.
Yeah, it's not like it's a regular pet, or it's like he brought his Labrador with him. It's like it's a big working dog, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's a what breed is that? I'm drawing a blank. Alaskan Huskies.
I just don't want to oversell it. Like, it's not perfect, but it's good. Like, some people walked out of it. I think the few mentions I saw of it on Twitter from people who were in my screening were kind of negative. Although, to be honest, the one guy, I won't mention names, who said that, who sort of implied that it sucked, is if you ever trust this unnamed gentleman on a horror movie, like, you obviously don't like horror movies, because I've never seen him come out of a horror movie, because I see movies with him all the time. He's never come out of a horror movie and been like, yo, that was good. He's always come out like, holy shit.
Well, you know, the other thing is, there were dogs in the first one, too, and the dogs actually played a critical point, a part in the Howard Hawks version as well. I get that. I get that. I'll be curious to see where they go with it. And like I said, you're right. Making it a remakey, making it too remakey, it's a fine line because here's the thing. If you've seen the original or the John Carpenter version, you can pretty much extrapolate the exact same thing happened with the Norwegian. And that was sort of the whole point of John Carpenter's version, is the exact same thing happened again. Because they're so isolated up there. And so I can buy that. You know what's funny is, when I was watching the original or the Carpenter version the other night, I'm sitting there and it's during the dog scene where the dog transforms and attacks all the other dogs. And I'm watching it, and suddenly my dog comes walking in the room, just kind of looks around very quietly, And I'm like, oh shit.
I'm a fucking goner.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, she's not a husky. She's this tiny little mutt. You know, she's maybe 30 pounds. But it was kind of freaky. Then she grew a second head and her side opened up and this giant flower with teeth came out. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I think what would be interesting is after you watch the new one and then you like compare them is, I guess you could say the thing has a learning curve because the way it behaves in this prequel is a lot different from the way it behaves in the Carpenter version. I feel like he's a lot stealthier in the Carpenter version. And if you want to be very generous, you could say that the new this film, you know, that's it learning. It's learning that it needs to be stealthier. Or you could just say that, you know, because they had CGI and they could do whatever the hell they wanted, they just, you know, they were like, put the pedal to the floor, you know, like, let's make this thing not try to be stealthy. Like, oh, look, it's kind of a human being. And oh, shit, its face just exploded and it's trying to kill more people. But I will say, well, you know, it's very grotesque. Like, I was surprised. Well, the shapes it takes in this are pretty gross. So don't take the kids to this one. It is rated R and it is.
Actually, there's a good question on that because I'm a huge horror fan. I show my kids a lot of stuff. I was telling somebody on Facebook. I'm like, oh yeah, I showed them The Thing last year, and somebody on Facebook was like, what? My kids freak out over, and it was like something really stupid. They saw the ads and they freaked out.
Oh, those kids,
my kids, I showed them Piranha, and I just made my wife made them close their eyes during the nude scenes.
So they closed their eyes for 25 minutes.
Well, like the underwater scene. Yeah. I mean, like certain ones where they're just like, well, you just can't avoid certain shots. But
yeah.
But this is and in fact, it was funny with Piranha is the sex angle on that is actually so complex to a child that the child just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
You know, body shots and stuff like that is they understand the fish ate his penis.
Probably because when it happened, you screamed out, "Oh my god, that fish just ate his dick!"
But yeah. So I mean, but here's the question: I mean, is it just gore? Is it just gore and violence that it's and maybe some language? It's not like, you know, there's not like tree rape in it or anything like that.
No, there's no tree rape. You know what? I don't think there's any nudity. There is.
Of course not. It's got a Mary Elizabeth Winstead. She doesn't do nude.
Well, yeah, but there is another girl in it, and you know, I can't give too much away, but. You never, like, see a nipple, Eve, but, I mean, you can see sort of, like, there's, like, breast, but it's as, you know, part of
the breast.
Nothing in this movie is going to make you want to, like, masturbate to it. And
I think that's going on the DVD cover box.
Yeah.
We better quickly submit this to Universal. Yeah. That's the best quote horror I've ever heard.
But, I mean, if you're worried about
there's nothing in this film that will make you want to masturbate.
Yeah. There's no sex that your kids need to hide from. I mean, if you're
parental approved.
Yeah. If your kids are afraid of get freaked out by nasty images, they might not enjoy it. You're not going to be scared by this. You're not going to be freaked out. And most adults won't be. But, I mean, it's pretty grotesque. Like, if you're queasy, But, yeah, not a lot of boobage.
Well, what's interesting is if you listen to the commentary and the behind the scenes features of the Carpenter version, they talk about the thing learning, and they talk about how it takes forms of whatever it's taken form of before, mm-hmm. which is why when it turns into the dog and it kind of climbs up into the ceiling, and it opens up, you see different eyes on it.
Yeah,
you see the different creature eyes, and at the very end of the movie where it takes this weird shape and it's got Blair on one side, it's got a dog coming out, it's got this giant mouth. The whole thing is that it then becomes this amalgamation of everything it turned into, which is actually kind of cool, and I think that was a neat thing. So it sounds like they're at least playing around with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually, the people that made it obviously liked the Carpenter version, and they obviously tried to do well by it. And, you know, I mean, I feel like it came from a good place. And you know what? I mean, the movie's being released on, like, what is it, October 14th? So, I mean, that's telling you that, like, this is not a February horror release. You know, this is not being dumped somewhere. They showed it to critics early. I saw it. I liked it. I mean, they've got some faith in this movie. And I think it's going to do, I mean, I think most people will, you know, enjoy it.
Good, good. I'm looking forward to it, at least to a certain degree. Let's talk about another horror movie that's coming out. It's The Woman by Lucky McKee, in which Lucky McKee brings his controversial and visceral story of survival and incivility to limited release.
This is our project, and it's a secret.
What are we going to do with her?
We're going to help her. We're going to train her, civilize her. Free her from herself, from her baser instincts.
Get the rope.
Everyone, keep your distance.
Are you sure you're not overextending?
Have you ever known me to let things get out of hand?
Are you a Lucky McKee fan, first of all?
Not especially. I mean, I've seen...
He hasn't done a whole lot.
Yeah, he's got little stuff, and I think like an episode of like Masters of Horror or something like that.
Yeah, he did May, he did The Woods, he did Masters of Horror, the Sick Girl episode. And that's pretty much it. There's another one he did with I forget who, Brian Cox, I think, is in it. I haven't seen that, but you've of course heard the notoriety behind The Woman, the Sundance, the guy at Sundance.
Yeah.
Have you seen that video?
I haven't seen The Woman, but I've heard, you know, things about it. I mean, things that make me want to see it, so I guess I'll say good things. But I mean, if someone's like, this movie is offensive, or this movie will fuck your head up, then I'm like, oh, yeah, I want to see this shit. Or they're like, you know.
Well, but there's that video. Did you see that? I think it was this past year at Sundance that this guy stormed out and was just bitching about the movie and saying how awful it was, and it kind of became this viral video. Have you seen that video?
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, it's actually pretty hilarious because the guy, first of all, if you're walking, I'm sure the description on it says what it is. And I interviewed Lucky McKee last week, and he made the point. He's like, if you just read why it's rated R, it's everything possibly wrong with a movie happening, you know? So,
yeah, it's people, I feel like, I mean, Sundance, you have to pay to see this, but I one of my favorite experiences of that nature is, in L.A., we get a lot of free screenings that anyone can go to if you wait in line. So I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning. And in front of me was like a 65-year-old nurse and like a guy who's like 40 and maybe his like 7-year-old dad. And they all hate the movie and they're complaining about the violence. And I'm like, the title tells you exactly what the fuck you're going to see.
There's going to be massacres with chainsaw.
Yeah, like, what do you expect? You see a movie, it's like, oh, this is called The Woman. It's like about, you know, like... horrible rapes and like whatever. Like, if you don't like that, don't see it. Don't see I Spit on Your Grave without reading the back of the box first. You know, like, oh, if you Google this, it will tell you for I Spit on Your Grave. Like, this is a 45-minute rape scene. Like, if you're not interested in that, or if you're not willing to tolerate that, like, don't put the movie in your player. Like, no.
Well, you know what's funny is I remember when they did the remake of The Hills Have Eyes, and they did a public screening. And I'm watching the movie, and it had walkouts. Mm-hmm. But the walkouts happened, and I'm like, oh, shit, you're not even at the walkout part. I mean, it was at the point where they, like, set fire to Ted Levine.
Yeah.
And they sort of crucified him, and the guy shot, like, the only bad things that really happened up to that point where the people walked out was the guy shot himself in the head with a shotgun, and his head exploded.
Yeah.
And then there was him setting on fire. They didn't even get to the rape yet.
Yeah,
so I thought that was fun because I'm like, well, they're if they're leaving now, that's good because it's just gonna get worse.
Yeah,
for them.
There's some serious tongue action during that rape. Does a bit of face licking.
Well, and then I said later, when the sequel came out, The Hills Have Eyes 2, which wasn't that good, I asked I interviewed Jonathan Craven and his dad Wes. About it, I told him, well, people walked out. I said, when are people going to walk out in this movie? And they're like, oh yeah, the first scene.
Or maybe when the guy goes into the outhouse. That's the grossest part of that movie.
Yeah. Well, no, it opens with a woman giving birth and they yank the fetus out and then beat her head in.
Yeah, that's tame. I can deal with that. I can't deal with poo-poo.
I see that all the time on, yeah. On Nickelodeon.
That's nothing new. I think that movie was bad, but I think the hot girl in it is like Daniela Alonso, I think, was in it. And like, I watch any movie she was in. So just
For wait, which have, one?
The, she's the with, super hot like Latina chick. I think she might.
Oh, the one that gets raped.
She gets raped. she gets raped by Stoneface, I think.
Yeah.
But she's in a lot of other.
Like that would be worse. Oh no, I'd rather have that mutant rape me.
Yeah, if you had pick, it's funny that mutant may have been.
He was so tender with his thrusting.
I think it's the guy that plays Derek Mears. I think that was Derek Mears that raped her. Who was
No, I don't think so. I think it was the big fat one, the big heavy dude. I think it was. I don't think it was Derek Mears' character who raped her. Mm. You and I interviewed Derek Mears at Comic-Con a couple years ago.
Yeah, we've talked to him a couple of times. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
Except when he's raping people.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
That happens. That tends to sully you. Anyways. Here's the thing. The woman, I like the woman. I thought it was good. It's twisted enough, but it's even keeled enough to like work as a movie. It is not just wall to wall gore, violence, or sickness. And really, actually, and I said this to Lucky McKeown. I said, "I go 90% of that movie you could lift and you could put it on television without any problems." And his response, he's like, "Well, then there's that other 10%." That you kind of need to have in the movie. And he's right. So, I mean, I say the woman's good. The woman's a decent movie, but you know what you're getting into. Read the rating. And if you don't want to see that stuff, don't see the damn movie.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth checking out. Now, the other one I want to bring up is Human Centipede 2. I got an early screener of this. It was funny. Woman and Human Centipede 2, they use barf bags in their... in their marketing. When I got the screener for The Woman, it came in a barf bag, which I thought was very clever. And apparently Human Centipede 2, when they showed it at Fantastic Fest, they handed out barf bags to people.
Siamese triplet connected via the gastric system.
What is this? 100% medically accurate.
Is this a perverted film you've been talking about?
Are you a fan of the Human Centipede movie? The first one. Did you like the first one?
No. I just think it wasn't like a movie competently made. You know, like
Tom Six is not a great filmmaker.
No, he's not a great filmmaker, and there's not, I mean, I can't be grossed out anymore by like things that are purposely trying to gross you out, like especially in a movie. Like if it was real, if like someone like came up and pulled their own intestines out and put it into some other guy's mouth and shit into his stomach, like that might gross me out in person. But like the thing about Human Centipede and Human Centipede 2, from what I've heard, you know, because I haven't had a chance to see it yet, it's just that it's sort of like someone sat down and is like, hey, what's some gross shit that people don't want to see? Oh, well, let's, you know, have some guy jerk off with sandpaper, or let's shit into somebody's mouth and like say that it's medically for real and like that you would survive, which is untrue. But the attempt is not going to get me. Like it's the stuff that like the thing does a better job of grossing me out, because like no one sat down and said, hey, what can we do that's gross? Oh, let's have a smegma joke. They're like, let's just have this thing like transform and design something really gross, and like that's gross, you know. But Human Centipede, I mean, I'll watch them, and I'll watch Human Centipede 2, and I'll watch Part 3, because I'll watch anything, and I want to see them try to push me. But like, you walk into a movie like this thinking you're gonna try to push me, I'm not gonna get pushed on this. Whereas like,
here's what happened though with Human Centipede 2 is well, part of it is, you're right, Tom Six is not a great filmmaker, and I think there are only two things that I thought, in my opinion, saved the first one, and the first was Dieter Laser did a great job. I thought he was just a great sort of Hannibal Lecter-ish villain. He was over the top and silly and goofy, but I enjoyed his performance. The second thing that saved Human Centipede, the first one, was the when is it going to happen factor.
Yeah.
When are you? Because you know what it's about. He's like, "What's about? It's about people. It's about three people sewn up mouth to ass." That is how you blurb that movie. There's no other way to do it. But you do have to sit there, and so you're watching the movie, and you're like, "When are they going to get kidnapped? When are they going to get sewn together? When is somebody going to take a shit?" Those moments you just wait for, and you wait for the delivery. Yeah, and you wait for the delivery, and whether the delivery's there or not, it's that experience movie. The problem is neither of those elements are really in Human Centipede 2. The guy who plays Martin, who Lawrence Harvey, I think is his name, he's creepy and weird, but he's not like Dieter Laser. Yeah. He's sort of this slovenly, goofy, weird, screwed up brother of his. Even though it's not, it's a very narcissistic film because it's literally the pitch is he's like, look how awesome Human Centipede was and what would happen if somebody saw it and freaked out.
Yeah.
Well, this is how powerful I am as a filmmaker. So you have that. But the other thing is the when is it going to happen moments. You've already seen those in the first movie. So it's him just replaying it. And Tom Six is, I described it to somebody as, it's like a horny teenage boy who got his hands on a girl's boobs for the first time. Where, yeah, it's there. And boobs can be awesome. But if you don't know what you're doing, it's the sloppy, goofiest, wackiest, just messiest thing you could do. And it has no finesse. And it's not attractive at all. I mean, there would be nothing attractive about watching two teenagers, no matter how good looking they are, if it's the first time they're doing it, there's going to be nothing attractive.
Yeah, he's
about
got his hands
like
on
that.
Boobs for the first time, and he thinks he's going to go tell all his friends he's an expert boob toucher. But but really, this kid's scared out of his mind by these boobies. Still,
he's like, "What did I do with that thing?" Yeah. And
like
so like by the time
of sand.
Yeah, by the time he gets to the end where they finally do sew 12 people ass to mouth together, and yes, they shit. It's so ridiculous and poorly done. It's actually funny. I was laughing through the sequences that were supposed to be horrifying or gross out. I was laughing because it just got ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I mean, because to the point that because the character doesn't speak, and as he's trying to get, he wants them all to shit because he has to end up stapling their faces to their asses because it's not medically accurate.
Yeah.
And so for him to get him, he starts going. Making those noises, and you're just like, now it just is getting stupid.
Yeah.
So
he should have just gave them like Taco Bell.
Well, he does. He gives them all laxatives.
Oh well, there you go.
Which is disgusting.
But by the time waiting period, just give him some like mineral oil and a laxative chocolate, and just watch the party happen.
Well, and so I said, I'm like, you know what? When the DVD comes out, I'm gonna play it at double speed and have the Benny Hill theme going through the background. Funniest movie ever, I'm sure. So, is the thing. Human Centipede does not. Human Centipede 2. Human Centipede barely worked as a horror film.
Yeah.
Human Centipede 2 doesn't work at all. It fails completely as a horror film. But it's probably one of the funniest movies I've seen all year.
Yeah, those are always. When you hear someone say that, like, I mean, I trust your opinion on a lot of things, and I'm going to watch Human Centipede 2, and I'll probably find it humorous. But then when someone's like, oh, it's so bad, you've got to see it, it's hilarious, a lot of times those end up just being so bad. Like, you're just like, I'm going to stick a knife in my appendix. Where is my appendix? Because I want to stab it.
Well, you know, the thing is, it is sort of like a horror movie version of The Room.
Like, there you go. But you're like, yeah, you got to see The Room, man. You got to see The Room. You're like, I will get drunk, and you can put it on the DVD player, and I'm not going to pay attention. I'm not going to go to a midnight screening, waste $6 in 2 hours.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Like I said, it sucks as a horror film, kind of rocks as a comedy. Anyways, let's talk box office. Last week, you had Real Steel take the box office with $27 million, which was good but not fantastic. But that's okay because I liked Real Steel. I thought it deserved to be done. Did you see it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked it.
And then there's Ides of March, which did about $10.5 million. Which was good for a George Clooney political thriller. I loved Ides of March, one of my favorite movies of the year. Did you see that one?
I did not.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out. Then you had like Dolphin Tale, Moneyball, 53, all the other ones that are doing. Lion King took a big dip, mainly because it came out on Blu-ray and DVD last week.
Yeah.
And 3D Blu-ray. So if you didn't see it 3D in the theater and you got a 3D TV. What do you think is going to win this weekend? Are you going to put your money on The Woman to make $50 million?
Yeah, I mean, that would give it a per-screen average of something like $1 million. So, I don't think that's going to come out on top.
No. I hope it does. I hope it does well. I don't even know what the Human Centipede did. Actually, let me look. Human Centipede made just shy of $50,000 last week. Mm-hmm. It was in only 18 theaters, though.
Yeah.
Which still isn't a huge per theater average.
No.
But not bad. It was still like a little less than $3,000 per theater. I'm hoping Lucky McKee's The Woman does better, and I hope that it helps that it's coming out in October. But it's going to be in the $100,000 range or less.
Yeah, it just depends on how many screens it's got, and it probably just doesn't, you know, and it doesn't have a lot of publicity behind it, so it's got an uphill battle.
Yeah. So we'll see. Hopefully that does. I think it's going to be Footloose is going to just win the weekend. It's going to be 30 million plus, I think.
Yeah, I think Footloose is the easy, solid bet. I think I would go Footloose, The Thing, Big Year, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
This weekend.
Yeah.
I'm hoping The Thing does number two.
I'm thinking 10 to 15 million for The Thing. I mean, as much as it has brand recognition and it has fans of the original, but so many people are dubious about the remake because of the love of the original. Yeah. And it's R-rated, and yes, it's horror, but
hopefully people see it because it's horror. But you know what? It's one of those horror movies that would actually do better probably in December. Because you see snow, you're like, oh, snow. Then you look outside, you're like, not snow.
Yeah. But just confuse the audience.
You know, yeah, hopefully people go see it. But
So I think that's what it's going to be. We'll see what happens next week. We got an email from somebody, and this really has nothing to do with just sort of like a story that he thought he'd point out, because I think I mentioned this about subtitles in films. And he basically tells a story about how he is from Thomas from Seattle. He's a longtime listener, and he will call in every now and then. He talks about how when he was in law school, he went to go see this Japanese horror film, and they turned out they didn't have subtitles for it, so they decided to watch it anyways. And he's like, okay, it was an interesting approach to see a movie and not know the actual, and see if you can follow it without actually knowing it. And he said about halfway, he got through most of it, and then about halfway through, he didn't quite know what was going on. And there was no body language, because I guess it was about a person whose head got cut off, so there was no body language to read, which makes it a little bit difficult. And he said he just kind of lost it. Now, here's the thing, though. I've seen a lot of Japanese horror movies, and you tend to just get completely confused in the middle anyways, subtitles or no. He basically said at the end, he goes, this is quoting from his email. He says, "We were destined to remain lost. To this day, this movie haunts me, not because it was scary, it really wasn't, but because it was the most random movie I've ever seen." Pretty much describes a lot of Japanese horror movies. So just in general, I don't know if I would, Thomas, that's a good story. Because this is how he described it. He says, "For the first half of the movie, we're kind of keeping up. Boy meets girl. Boy loses girl. Boy wants girl back. The second half of the movie really lost us. A floating head showed up out of nowhere, seeming to offer the guy relationship advice, or the head could have been telling the guy to kill the girl. We had no way of knowing what the head wanted. We had no body language to read." So there's your floating head. Again, sounds typical of a Japanese horror movie, but I don't know whether I would use that as a template to say whether or not you can just understand a movie with or without subtitles.
I'm interested in the title of this movie and what it's about. It's actually really funny. I had pitched an idea to a production company before based on Cambodian mythology, which was a monster called the Krausu, which is actually a floating head. And there have been a few movies about it in the Asian region. But I'm just wondering if maybe this was a movie about the Krausu. Like, how many people outside of Asia, if you're like, floating head, I'd be like, oh, you mean the Krausu?
No, the floating head is actually pretty prevalent in terms of mythology. And I have a friend who's Indonesian. Mm-hmm. And he says in Bali, there's legends of floating heads in Bali. They were not horror movies. Like really, that in Bali, there are stories of ghostly floating heads.
Yeah. What makes the Krausu a little different is that normally the internal organs are still there, hanging down from the head.
That's not sanitary.
No. You got some tentacle, you got some intestines and some lungs and shit. But
he's like, you're dripping. Can you go? Did you bring a napkin?
Bring a mop.
Something else, another listener feedback. I mentioned this on the Idiot Boxes, but I'll mention it again here. We've got there's a writer. His name's Brandon Ford, and he's an independent writer. He has a book called Decayed Etchings out, and you can order it on Amazon as a physical book. I think you can get an ebook as well. He sent me a review copy, and I checked it out. You know, nice little sort of short horror fiction, kind of in the vein of Stephen King, Clive Barker. It kind of has that 90s-ish feel to it of horror fiction. So, yeah, give it a shot. His name's Brandon Ford. The book's Decayed Etchings. I just wanted to give a little bit of a shout out. So if you're looking for something to read this horror movie season, after you read Who Goes There by John W. Campbell, you can check out Ford's book. And then finally, the other thing I want to mention is the horror marathon is this weekend, the 24-hour Shock Around the Clock marathon in Columbus, Ohio. If you go to the Fat Guys at the Movies site, you can find, I interviewed the guy who runs the marathon, and we were talking about the movies at length, about what they're showing. But it has some interesting selections. They're going to show Midnight Sun. Have you seen Midnight Sun?
I have not.
That's one of the premieres. It's the Midwest premiere. They're also showing a Serbian film on 35mm. Probably the only time in Ohio you're going to get a chance to see the 35mm print of the movie.
It's hard to find that movie anywhere. So,
well, actually, it comes out on DVD in a couple weeks.
Is it going to be the? Is it going to be like unrated? Is it going to be what they showed at Fantastic Fest? Or?
It's unrated, but I do not believe it's the original cut.
Yeah, I you know what? Have you seen it before?
No, I haven't. I'm waiting to go see it this weekend at the horror marathon.
I actually got to see it, and it's one of those. It's again one of those things where like they have a few things where like they write down, hey, like what's fucked up that we can do to people?
What's the worst thing we can put on screen? Yeah,
I feel like they didn't quite get to the worst thing, but I mean, like Rob Hunter talked to me about. It. He said if you view it as a black comedy, it's hilarious. If you view it as like a drama or like something that it's like then it's like it's terrible, but no, it's again it's one of those things where you go into it thinking like this is gonna be fucked up. It's a lot less fucked up than my mind goes to. But the average person is not gonna want to see that, and they're not gonna be like, oh, this that was good. They're gonna be like, why did people make shit like this? But
yeah, well, and they're showing it. It's the theater's about 250 people can fit in it. So you got the diehard horror fans. Now they've shown some extreme stuff in the past. Last year they showed Martyrs, and that upset a lot of people. Not like if you didn't have walkouts, but you had people that just like they want to see the classics, or they want to see they're not like, I don't want to see the crazy shit, the extreme stuff. They showed Irreversible a couple of years ago. I hated that movie, and it's not because of the rape scene. I just thought it was a shitty movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like I was like, great rape, good.
Yeah.
Now I like it. But I hated the movie just because you say that to people that you hate Irreversible. I'm like, oh, it's good. I'm like, no. I don't like Gaspar Noé anyways.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between like a lot of these like shock movies are made to be shocking because like that's how they're going to get attention, and they're like poorly made. Serbian film is actually not badly made. Like it's competent. There's a story to it, but I mean the story basically is putting them in these situations to do this. But there was a movie at Fantastic Fest that I saw that everyone was like, "Oh, this is the worst fucking movie of all time. Don't see it." The name's slipping my mind right now, but it was one of those movies where they're like, "Hey, let's make a list of things that are fucked up." Like, imagine if you got AIDS, but then you also got raped. So, like, it's funny
Precious. That
you got raped because you gave
it was Precious.
Yeah, it was Precious. But, I mean, they're like, oh, look, check it out. Here's a horse's dick, and this guy's going to kiss it. Like, I mean, like, but it was also a poorly made film. It's something like a horrible something or
a horrible way to die?
No, it wasn't a horrible way to die. I'll try to look at it quietly in the background, see if I can find it. We reviewed it for Fantastic Fest. And
this year or last year?
The year I went. But
oh, yeah, the important one.
Yeah, who gives a fuck about anything? I'm just Fantastic. It was 2010. I'll see if I can. Yeah. But.
All right. Well, like I said, just check out the horror marathon. If you're a horror movie fan, support the marathon. Come see it. Not only do they show. They're going to show 12 movies, including, Serbian film and Midnight Sun, but they're going to show like Bride of Frankenstein, The Hitch, the original The Hitcher. They're going to show Hellraiser, Slither, Goku, Body Snatcher from Hell, which is a Japanese movie from the 60s. You've got House of the Devil they're going to show. They've got a great lineup. So go check it out. You can go to horrormarathon.com. If you go and you want to seek me out and say, hey, fat guy, and I'll punch you in the balls, and then I'll realize, oh, you're talking about me as a public figure. So then I'll shake your hand. And so... but yeah, go to horrormarathon.com. They have all the information there. You can pre-order tickets. You can buy them by PayPal. By the time you're listening to this, it's either happening or it's like Friday night. But it's only $35, which is a fantastic price to see 12 movies. And it's $40 at the door, and that's even cheaper than going to see the early screening of Tower Heist that we're talking about doing for $60. So, anyways, wanted to drop those in there. Did you find that movie yet, Robert?
I'm still scrolling.
So here we go. Let's move on to the Fat Guy 5. And this one, in relation to all these other movies, the movie this week, The Thing, of course, we wanted to take intense, snowy movies because we couldn't do monster movies. We've already done monster movies in the past. So this is their top 5 intense, snowy movies, which really isn't our top 5. It's about as scientifically accurate as Human Centipede. But let's start it off. The first one is The Thing from Another World, Howard Hawks' original movie, in which the thing is more Frankenstein-ish. It's sort of like a vegetable Frankenstein. But it's still a great little movie from the 50s. It's a great monster movie. Guys in rubber suits, guys in suits were the staple back then. And it works. James Arness is the thing. And the only guy with a beard in this one is the crazy scientist. So.
Beards play a very large part in the new movie. Everyone has a beard. Lots of beards.
Even
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
She shows up with a beard.
The thing comes out of the ice with a huge beard. It's like, what's up, guys?
It's like, what's up? I'm really hanging over right now. Yeah.
It's fucking cold out here.
you've got the next one.
I've got
this. This
is
your
one.
Suggestion.
You did The Thing from Another World, so I'm supposed to say The Shining.
Yes.
The Shining, I mean, obviously, without snow in this one, you wouldn't have the same movie because they could just leave.
They could just get in the road and go away.
Just walk out of there. But,
you know what's funny about The Shining is if you search The Shining, everything, that's true. But if you search The Shining, there's like, it is touted as... By furries. You know what furries are? You know what furries
are. Oh, I know what furries are, and I want to hear how they justify this.
Well, because there's the furry getting a blowjob in the ending sequence.
That's true.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, is that people like go crazy about the film because it's got, the furries are like, oh my God, we're validated, because it was like, you know what, 1981 when this came out. So it was a big deal to the furry population.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I guess I get it, but.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
You know what the thing is? That people have been getting blowjobs in animal costumes forever, and I don't think it necessarily means you're furry.
I know it's a stretch. Yeah. It is a stretch.
I mean, I guess if you're a furry, like, you need to grab on to whatever's out there. You know.
Like, yeah, they don't show up in a lot of movies. Yeah. They reference them in Community, without calling them furries. Mm-hmm. If you ever watch Community, they have a little bit of a nod that the dean might be a bit of a furry. Of course, the dean's kind of a pervert on anything, so take that with a grain of salt. The next movie we have on the list is A Simple Plan, which I had heard, because I knew somebody who used to work for the Ohio Film Commission, which doesn't exist anymore. They were originally planning on shooting the Simple Plan in Ohio, but they couldn't guarantee snow because it's Ohio.
It's 50-50 this year, guys.
Yeah. Well, and what's funny is then when I finally watched the documentary of it, of the behind the scenes of it, they're like, yeah, where we shot it, we didn't have snow, so we kind of had to make our own snow. And I'm like, God damn it. They could have done that in Columbus.
Yeah.
Again, without snow, you wouldn't have the movie.
No.
The next one I want to do is Fargo. Again, without snow, what would Fargo be? Because he buries the money in the snow.
Yeah.
Great movie, though. I love Fargo, and it's intense and crazy, and it's still to this day one of my favorite Coen brother movies.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And you've got the last one on the list.
Last one, The Empire Strikes Back, while this movie might exist without snow because they would just put it on a different alien planet. I mean, a solid, 60 minutes is taken up on the ice planet of Hoth, and we get some wicked cool battles between AT-ATs and snow speeders, and we have to cut open Tauntauns to shield ourselves from the cold weather, and we have a Yeti.
That's right. Yeah. So. Well, a wampum, I think is what it's called.
That's true.
Well, or a wampa. Wampum's money, yeah. Money from the Native Americans.
Yeah, fancy beads. A wampa, W-A-M-P-A.
Now, you know what's funny with movies like The Empire Strikes Back and the Star Wars, they always say the ice planet of Hoth. Well, here's the thing. And like desert planet of Tatooine. And you're like, or Coruscant is a city planet.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, they sometimes think very narrowly because you could go to the Arabian Desert in America, on the Earth, and you'd be like, this is a desert planet.
Yeah.
And people up in Barrow, Alaska are going to be like, the hell it is.
Yeah, they just really are into hyperbole because like, they just take it to this max level. Dagobah, the swamp planet. Literally, the entire planet is a swamp. Like,
or Endor, the forest moon of Endor.
Or what's another? Oh, like, you never see this one in the movies, but Admiral Akbar is Mon Calamari, which is an aquatic planet, which is 100% water, and their cities are built underground or underwater. If you read the books, which as a young man I did.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, we live on a planet that's like 70-some% water.
Yeah, what is our planet in the Star Wars universe? It'd be called like the Four Seasons planet of Earth, the wide variety of tropical things.
That's right.
I have no idea what the fuck they would call us.
They'd be like, it's the idiot planet because it has all the idiots.
It's
on
that
it,
mixed though. Bag planet, you know, the one that's got different climates and it actually it revolves around its sun. It doesn't just sit in one spot.
The everything planet of Earth.
Yeah. Although maybe it just because I guess like Mars doesn't have too many different regions. It's all pretty much red rock except for the polar ice cap. But
well, yeah.
So I guess maybe Earth is pretty retarded in universal terms. we fucked it up.
We're trying to do everything.
Yeah.
Earth is multitasking.
It's a paint-by-numbers planet.
We better run this down, finish it off with the dishonorable mentions. We've got Whiteout, which was a movie that almost looked like it was going to be The Thing remake. Because when they announced they were remaking The Thing or doing a prequel, it was right around when Whiteout came out. And I remember seeing the trailer for it and be like, Jesus, they got that movie done fast. But sadly, there are no aliens in Whiteout. And that's actually what makes it not that great of a movie.
Yeah.
And it has that guy from it has Gabriel Mocked in it, who's just ridiculous.
You know, I like him in Suits.
Show
on USA. That's actually a really good show, and he's actually really good in it. But in everything else, you know, who cares?
Yeah, that's true. The other one is Jack Frost. You wanted to bring that up as a dishonorable mention. Are you talking? Are you talking about?
You can just say Jack Frost. Period. And if people want to hear Michael Keaton, or if they want to hear. You know, Revenge of the Mutant Killer Snowman. They'll hear what they want to hear, but I'm bringing it up.
Wasn't Brian Benben in the Mutant Killer Snowman one?
I don't recall. It's not one of those movies that I watch and then I think about it. You know, I kind of watch it and then I forget it.
Okay.
According
that's exactly,
to my...
I'm pretty sure that that's what they want.
Yeah.
When you see a movie, is to not remember it at all.
Yeah. According to my computer, which, you know, it's been wrong in the past, Shannon Elizabeth was in the original Jack Frost in 1996.
Oh, wow.
The horror one. And then, you know, I had brought up Jack Frost 2 as well, because I could have swore he ends up on a beach at some point, which, you know, a snowman should not be in the tropics.
That is not a good location choice.
Yeah, I think the location scout on this sort of fucked up. I found a great spot. It's really cheap. It's in the Everglades.
Yeah, you might want to rethink that one. So. All right. Well, I think that's it. We better wrap up this segment. You know what's surprising? I have to say I'm a little disappointed in you, Robert.
What?
This has not been that offensive of a segment. And
sorry. I did bring up a horse's dick. And by the way, the movie was called The Life and Death of a Porno Gang.
Ah.
It's terrible.
You brought up... actually saying I did bring up a horse's dick is... sounds even worse than how you brought it up in conversation.
Yeah, there's a thing of a horse's dick and this guy's gonna kiss. But now I'm like, hey, remember that time I was talking about that horse's dick?
Do you remember when I had that horse's dick?
Remember when I was
flinging it around?
I had that life model cast of a horse's dick. I actually run a side business. It's a bestiality thing. I cast animal dicks and I sell them on the internet.
Is it Have a Dick Inside You?
What?
.com.
Have a Dick Inside You.com. It's zoodicks.com.
I wonder if I'm looking that up right now because I will bet you anything that exists. Zoodicks.com.
Hello.
And Google Chrome cannot find it. Damn, get that thing. You better register that quickly. Are you there? Oop, are you there?
I'm here now.
Sorry about that. I was having some problems.
You tried to go to zoodicks.com and crash the whole show.
I was too busy looking at zoodicks.com. Zoodicks.com apparently does not exist as a website, so you better go reserve that.
Yeah, I'm actually going to let's whois.net this one and see if someone owns zoodicks.com. Because, you know, they could be squatting. Zoodicks.
Are you squatting on Zoodicks right now?
I'm squatting on Zoodicks. The domain is not registered. For $10.95, Zoodicks.com is yours.
Wait, why does it cost $10.95 for Zoodicks? Don't they have these things like it's $5 for like 15 years or something?
Well, that's from Whois. I'm sure maybe if you went to GoDaddy, you would get a better price. Now, if you want Zoodicks.co.uk, that's $38 for 2 years.
Well, that's not bad.
Other domains for purchase include parkdicks.com, animal-dicks.com, safaridicks.com. I think that's a good one.
I love the fact that they're like, the way the algorithm works, it's like, well, it says zoo, so let's take parks and recreation and you know, playground dicks.
It's actually really fun to do is just pick a random like website name and type it into these things and read what they give you. Like back, let's do Fat Guys at the Movies. This is a good spin-off. Here it comes.
Fat Dicks at the Movies.
It just tells me that. Oh, here we go. Weight Guys at the Movies. Fat Guys at WatchTheMovies.com.
Well, that sounds like it was just poorly translated.
Fat Guys at
StopTheMovies.com. Please come down to FatGuysWatchTheMovies.com. I don't know what accent that was. I had about as accurate of an accent as I do the people on Footloose. We should go to a break.
Let's do it.
All right. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are back from the infamous middle segment, during which Robert Fury was just a little bit too respectable. And so I think we sufficiently made it unrespectable by the end of the segment.
At the end, I tried a little bit.
Yeah. So if you want to go back and listen, we talk about Human Centipede 2. We talk about The Woman. So if you're listening to this on the radio, you can go check us out on that. We talk a little bit more about The Thing and just our general love for the original and sort of what could happen and did happen in the prequel. But now we are going to move on. What do we have coming up next year, Robert?
I believe it's the world famous DVD Roundup.
That's right. Yeehaw! See, you just—it's pathetic.
It's a little whipping noise. There it is. I was promised a whipping noise, and I heard it.
Yes. Why don't you start? If you got any DVDs that you want to highlight for that came out this week, would have been like this past Tuesday.
You know, I thought this week wasn't great, and one I was interested in seeing but haven't watched yet. I actually have a screener of it though. Is The Trip with Steve Coogan, and it just seems like it might be funny. But
I like Steve Coogan.
Yeah, he's great, but you know. I saw Horrible Bosses, and that came out. I'm not a big fan of that movie, but I haven't seen Green Lantern, so I'll probably Netflix that one. But,
oh, you'll hate it. I know you, and you'll hate it.
I love Ryan Reynolds, though.
See, I liked, you know, Green Lantern, that actually comes out the Friday, it's the 14th.
Oh.
And I'm one of those people, I liked Green Lantern, I was very forgiving of it, it has its problems. But some people, I heard somebody say it's the worst superhero movie ever made, and I'm like, I don't.
That's probably not.
That's I mean, have you seen Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, or Batman and Robin? There's a lot
or
worse.
Superman 3. I mean.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad, or Superman Returns, for that matter.
I mean, yes.
What did you just drop an F-bomb
on
me?
I might have.
Anyways, but yeah, I liked Green Lantern. So it comes out. You can get it on 3D Blu-ray. I don't know if it's worth seeing it in 3D. But it's definitely, I thought it was a fun movie for what it was. It wasn't great, but it was worth it. I liked Horrible Bosses. You didn't like Horrible Bosses?
I was not. I did not. I didn't. I liked Charlie Day in it, but, you know, overall, I didn't really like the characters. I didn't think it was I thought it wanted to be crazy, but it wasn't very crazy. I don't know. I was just let down.
It was my favorite comedy of the summer. Then squeaked in later by the highbrow comedy Human Centipede 2, which is also one of the funniest movies of the year. There's also Bones Season 6, which is, do you watch Bones at all?
I've watched episodes here and there when the previews look interesting. Yeah. But
it's not a bad show. It's a neat little unique procedural.
Yeah, it's so. Not terrible. I never feel bad about watching it, but I just don't go out of my way or set my DVR. There's too much other stuff to watch.
Yeah, you're too busy.
I pick it on a show by show basis, episode by episode. Yeah.
The other one is Judy Moody and the Not Bummer Summer, which I'm pretty sure you haven't seen, but it's actually not a bad movie. I took my kids in the summer to see this, and it got crushed by all the other big blockbusters, but it was a fun sort of Nickelodeon level of film. It's not Nickelodeon, but it's something that would be on like Nickelodeon or Disney Channel, sort of an iCarly-esque crowd for maybe a little bit younger audience.
I love
it's
iCarly.
Cute. iCarly's awesome. Do you know I asked Lucky McKee if he was gonna do if he would consider doing an iCarly episode, and he's like, yeah, they haven't asked me.
I actually worked on the pilot for
really
5 days. Yeah,
awesome. Awesome. The other one is another couple more to mention. You got Terry, which is an interesting sort of, it's a very typical, quirky, weird, morose, sort of dark comedy about a overweight kid in school who's trying to sort of deal with some social problems. It's okay. I'm not a big fan of those kind of films. And then there's The Tree of Life, which I'm sort of forced to mention because it exists. I hated The Tree of Life. I mean, I hated it with a passion.
I think you gave it an F on your report.
I did give it an F. I got in a lot of trouble for that. Not from like the editorial staff of FSR, but just from general film fans.
Yeah, well, I give it an F without even seeing it, just by hearing about it. So.
But I mean, the only reason I have it as a recommendation is I'm like, look, if you like Terrence Malick and you loved Tree of Life, go get it on Blu-ray. It's a gorgeous looking movie. You're not going to be disappointed, but if you're just like, I don't know what to watch, should we watch this or should we watch, you know, something, you know, light and fluffy? Just don't go in unwarned on this one. It was going to be my stinker, but then I saw the real stinker of the week, which is The Zookeeper. Which, let me just tell you, a Japanese floating head. This is a reference to something that happened in the middle segment. A Japanese floating head horror movie makes more sense than The Zookeeper did.
Yeah, it's Paul Blart, Night at the Zoo.
Oh, it's so bad. Oh, it's worse than any of the... Oh, it's just awful. So anyways, review wrap-up. We have The Big Year, which gets a preemptive suck. Footloose, which I said surprisingly kind of rocks. The Thing, which you said almost rocks.
Borderline
almost
totally rocks.
Borderline rocks.
I enjoyed it. I was just trying to hedge my bets against what everyone else says, but I like it. I'll buy it on Blu-ray. I'll watch it again, definitely.
Cool. And then also The Woman, which I said rocks, and The Human Centipede 2, which is... very funny, but as a horror movie, it's terrible. Then next week, we've got Johnny English Reborn, The Mighty Max, which is a Heartland film, so I don't want to see it. Paranormal Activity 3, and The Three Musketeers in 3D. FatGuysInTheMovies.com, check us out. We got about 25 seconds left. Robert, tell us where to find you and what you do.
I'm the newly crowned editor-at-large at Film School Rejects, trying to bring some new columns. Check us out at filmschoolrejects.com. We're doing a lot of horror stuff right now, which I am kind of in charge of. And if you want to follow me personally, you can go to twitter.com/rejectrobert, where I talk about random stuff and curse a lot.
That's right. We will see you guys next week.
Have fun.